You're listening to Irish Sports Talk.
Hello, fans. This is Irish Sports Talk. I'm Randall, and joining me today is Norm Wood. Norm, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Randall. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for taking the time to join us today. Before we get started, why don't you tell us where we can maybe read some of your work or where fans can follow you on Twitter?
Sure. I've covered Virginia Tech athletics for the Daily Press newspaper in Newport News, Virginia for, this is my 19th season of covering the football program, and I've also covered University of Virginia men's basketball program, pretty much every other sport there other than football, and I have since 2008, and obviously still dabble a bit in Atlantic Coast Conference matters too, so kind of all in one there. And you can check out my stuff at on Twitter at my handle is at Norm Wood, just the way it sounds, my name, NORMWOOD, or you can check me out on our newspaper's website, which is Daily Press, DailyPress.com /sports, and that'll take you right to our sports front, and I'm usually always out there in front. It's not hard to find me.
Very good. Sounds like you stay busy with between the two schools, Virginia Tech and Virginia. So definitely,
yeah, no question.
Check that out.
Yeah, no question about that. It really cranks up. Obviously, once we get the ACC basketball season, then I'm kind of running around in circles between Charlottesville and Blacksburg and wherever else in the ACC.
Wow. Very good. So looking at the Virginia Tech football team, they obviously started out very well against Florida State. We didn't really know what Florida State was going to be like this year. But
right.
Just tell us a little bit about this football team, how they've looked, and kind of what you're expecting from this team.
Yeah, you're right, Randall. That was sort of a I don't want to call it fool's gold, but win over FSU, just because I think the jury may be out just a bit still on FSU, but I don't think it's nearly as valuable a victory as it seemed to be at the time. Road win in the ACC is obviously going to be a nice feather in their cap, but and the fact that it was a ranked win at the time, and that may seem odd, but by the time we get to the end of the season, if FSU continues to struggle, but I don't think they're quite as bad as I looked at times here in the first 4 or 5 weeks. So that obviously led into a William & Mary game for Virginia Tech that they coasted through, and then the big disaster, obviously, in Norfolk, Virginia against Old Dominion, where I think some of the youth of Virginia Tech's defense was exposed, and they tried to adjust between man and zone coverages, and especially in the secondary, I think they – failed miserably. I mean, it was a horrible failure for Virginia Tech in that game. Three new starters this season in that secondary, replacing three guys that ended up in the NFL, and Greg Stroman and Brandon Faison, and of course the first round draft pick with the Pittsburgh Steelers, Terrell Edmonds. So a lot to replace in that secondary, and that was a real wake up call for guys like Caleb Farley and Bryce Watts, especially at the cornerback spots. That a really stunning game considering, Old Dominion had, 13 plays of 20 plus yards in that game, which is really unheard of for a Bud Foster, coordinated defense, especially against an opponent of that caliber. 632 yards Old Dominion had in that, game, which was the most ever surrendered by a Bud Foster coordinated defense in his 24 seasons as Virginia Tech's defensive coordinator. So a really shocking evening. And, of course, it got worse when Josh Jackson, Virginia Tech's starting quarterback, went out possibly for the season with a broken fibula early in the fourth quarter. And then the very next day, the day after that ODU loss, Virginia Tech dismissed its best pass rusher for what Coach Fuente called not living up to the standards that he set for the program. He's sort of an habitual offender, it wasn't just one incident. It sounds like it was a lot of little things, and maybe one final event was the straw that broke the camel's back with Trevon Hill. So arguably their second best defensive player overall, and really put them in what a lot of people would consider, and I thought so too, a bind going into the Duke game this past weekend. But a huge effort, especially considering Duke had its surprise start from Daniel Jones, the starting quarterback, just 3 weeks removed from a broken clavicle. And Virginia Tech decided to come at Duke by rushing only three and dropping eight. And despite missing Trevon Hill, again, their best pass rusher, they got to Daniel Jones three times, bottled up for Duke's running game, and made life difficult for their receivers, and really put a lot of pressure on that passing game, and Duke couldn't live up to it. And they got a great effort. Tech got a great effort out of Ryan Willis at quarterback, the stand-in for Josh Jackson. The guy threw for 332 yards in his first start since he was at Kansas 2 years ago, transferred to Virginia Tech in January 2017. And like I said, comes in, throws 332 yards and three touchdowns in his first start for Tech against Duke. So still trying to figure out, I think, what this team is all about. They're 3-1 and number 24 in the nation, and I think maybe we got a decent read at Duke, which is a good defensive team. The last couple of years they've been better than they've been since the 70s, really, on the defensive side. And so that's a quality win. But again, earlier in the season, like you said, the FSU games lost a little value, and then the ODU loss is just a total head scratcher.
Yeah, and the Old Dominion game, you mentioned the youth in the secondary. Do you think that they kind of overlooked Old Dominion, or did they have that many issues with the secondary?
I think they really had a lot of issues, and I think a lot of it was deals with communication, and consider the fact that they had issues, major issues, communicating in Norfolk at ODU, a field that holds 20,000 fans. I mean, they packed the joint, and it was a unique atmosphere for a game, only because it was a homecoming game for a lot of players on both teams. I mean, they've got, obviously Old Dominion has 24 players on its roster from that Hampton Roads area of Virginia, and Virginia Tech has 14 players on its roster from there. So it was a lively crowd, but 20,000 people shouldn't be an issue as far as communication is concerned. And so they had some issues sort of getting the adjustments in and out of the game, and then once they did, they couldn't properly adjust. And between sort of man and zone, and then mixing some of the schemes. And like I said, that was a real eye opener, I think, not just for the secondary, but also for cornerbacks coach Brian Mitchell, who sits up in the booth in games. So he talked about moving down to the field, or at least thinking about it in the future. He's still staying up in the booth, but he's going to consider moving down to the field if the communication issues persist, which they didn't seem to against Duke. They came a long way in that game. But I think it exposed more about Virginia Tech, especially considering that all those yards that ODU racked up were with their backup quarterback. I mean, he came in, their second or third series of the game and never left, and ended up throwing for 495 yards, which is the most that the second most Virginia Tech has given up since beginning of the 1987 season, which was Frank Beamer's first season on the sideline there.
Wow. So staying on the defense, what are some of the strengths of this defense? I mean, Virginia Tech usually puts out a strong defense, and I think Notre Dame's kind of looking at that. Even though they had some issues, they still expect to face a decent defense this weekend. What are some of the strengths of this team on the defensive side?
Well, I think we all thought coming in to the season looking at Tech's defense that the front, the defensive front would be a strength, especially as it goes to the first line guys. I mean, beyond that, they don't have a ton of depth, or so we thought anyway, especially at defensive tackle. At the end spots, they had some bodies. They had a lot of young guys there, and I think they were looking to try to get some of those guys into a rotation earlier in the season. But I think the real test came last week, obviously, where like I said, you're no longer have Trevon Hill, their best pass rush guy at 3.5 sacks in the first three games of the season and led the team. And they're still able to get a real strong rush on Daniel Jones and get him on the ground three times, you know, which was a lot considering Duke came into that game only having given up four sacks all season long. So Ricky Walker, a defensive tackle, is an all-ACC caliber type player. They call him, it's cliche, obviously, but Bud Foster likes to call him the bell cow of that defense there in the middle. And, he is everything that, as advertised. He lives in the backfield. ODU coach, even on a bad night for Virginia Tech's defense, ODU coach Bobby Wilder said just a few days ago that, he thought Ricky Walker was one of their running backs. He was in the backfield so much, and so he can make a difference pushing the middle of the line, which is obviously got to be a concern, I would think, for Notre Dame with that big left guard out for the season, and I know he's a critical part of that line and really the whole team, I guess, as a team captain. So that's got to be a concern for Notre Dame, I would guess. And Houchin Gaines, a guy at defensive end, who is an undersized end, and that's sort of a trend for Virginia Tech, but even by Virginia Tech standards, he's an undersized guy at end. Played motivated at Duke. His mom was ill. He came into the game with his mom's initials underneath his eyes, written in black, and then his mom apparently passed away last night.
Oh, wow.
And he had 2.5 sacks in that game against Duke. So he's coming in motivated and hard to tell what kind of frame of mind he'll be in for this weekend's game, considering this is a tough week for the kid. But he's another guy to watch up front. And like I said, they're developing some depth at those end and tackle spots. It's still very young behind guys like Ricky Walker and Drop Hewitt and Vinny Mahoda. When he gets in, he's been hurt, sort of still recovering from an ACL injury. He played defensive end last year and played defensive tackle early in his career, and he's moved back to tackle this year. But like I said, he's still trying to get back to 100%. Was a starter at end last year. And then Emmanuel Belmar is a guy to watch for defensive end, also a guy that Virginia Tech thinks a lot of, and he's sort of the replacement for Trevon Hill as a starter. So that's the strength up front, I'd say, on the defense. And then Reggie Floyd at safety is also a real strength, kind of bringing along the rest of those young defensive backs. They're still getting acclimated at the linebacker spots. They came into the season without a single player who was older than a sophomore at linebacker, which is, again, odd for a Virginia Tech defense not to have some experience and some experience depth even at those spots. But they've looked pretty good with Rayshard Ashby at middle linebacker. He had 15 tackles last week and doing what a middle linebacker does. He runs, he's always around the ball and works well laterally, and I think they're doing a nice job sort of working him in with Dylan Rivers at the left outside linebacker spot, replacing Tremaine Edmonds, another first round pick last year, and then Khalil Wadler as their right outside linebacker, nickelback guy. He started out as a safety this season, did not look comfortable, but has slid over to that right outside linebacker nickelback spot, and has looked really good here the last couple games. He was one of the few bright spots against ODU. He struggled on a few plays, but I'd say by and large he played pretty well in that game, and then against Duke was wiped out. So they're still trying to get a little older and build some depth, as a lot of teams are this time of year, but they are strong up front.
Yeah, that front is definitely a concern for Notre Dame with Alex Barr's injury, and Trevor Ruland is replacing him, but he is a little bit undersized and hasn't played a whole lot, so that'll definitely be something to watch in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And then looking at the offensive side of the ball, obviously you talked about Ryan Willis coming in. Who are some of the other guys on the offense that Notre Dame fans should be watching out for on Saturday?
I tell you what, they've been really pleased with the development of their receivers. That was a big concern for Tech coming into the season, just because they another spot they really lacked depth and really lacked anybody that was proven at the position. Eric Kuma had come in after a nice season last year, but he was sort of a number three option for him last year and developed quickly. And Sean Savoy is another guy that was the number two returning receiver, and I think they expected some big things out of him. Savoy has really not played all that well this season, but Kuma's played well, big target at 6'2", 220, and can really jump. He's great with the 50-50 balls and can take advantage of some smaller cornerbacks or defensive backs if he's matched up against them. And Hezekiah Grimsley is a guy that lines up in the slot an awful lot, works really well across the middle of the field, and has some speed once he gets his hands on the ball. And then I think the real sort of the X factor, I think, for that receiving core coming into the year, who has really sort of emerged, is a guy named Damon Hazleton, who from up in your neck of the woods, close to it anyway, played at Ball State for his freshman year. And then had 51 catches there and then transferred to Virginia Tech, sat out last year. And he is, again, another really big target there at 6'2", 225, muscular kid. And I think they're expecting him to have a nice season, and he's had a great start so far. So beyond that, the running backs, that they've been productive. They've had a really productive running game up until last week. They did not run the ball very well against Duke. Again, that's a credit to Duke's defensive front. They're strong defensively. But Stephen Peoples, who had a nice game a couple years ago at Notre Dame, and Deshaun McLeese are the two guys to watch for at the running back spots. Peoples is more of a between-the-tackles guy, has a little power to his game, and McLeese is a one-cut runner and dangerous if he gets in the open field. So they're sturdy on the offensive line. I wouldn't call it an all-world offensive line or anything like that, but they're sturdy, especially in the middle, I'd say, with Kyle Chung at left guard and Braxton Pfaff at the right guard spots. And Christian Darrisaw has been a nice addition at left tackle, a true freshman starter at left tackle, which is a rarity. And I guess that says something about Virginia Tech and the fact that they lost some talent last year, but they're able to replace him with a guy that's actually played very well as a true freshman at left tackle. Still, I think that's a question mark for them. They've rotated a lot of guys in and out on the offensive line just to get comfortable. Some injuries they've had up front. Darrisaw was injured and out for the ODU game, came back against Duke, had a right foot or ankle injury. Managed to overcome that, get back for the Duke game. So, the receiving core and Willis, obviously, I think when he's comfortable there, he can scoot a little bit too. He can get away. He's not going to churn up a bunch of yards on the ground, but he can move around in the pocket and can throw on the run. And I think that's a little bit surprising to some folks to see, you know, his 6'4" frame and think he's just kind of a tree back there. He can get around a little bit back there. So, he can throw and run. Like I said, he can be dangerous looking for guys downfield and place right down.
Yeah, and the more I look into this game and get ready for it, I think it's going to come down to how both teams, offensive and defensive lines, play, because obviously Notre Dame's got some questions in the offensive line, and defensive line is a strength for Virginia Tech, and then Notre Dame's defensive line has looked really good this year, and they're going against, like you said, a solid offensive line. So that will definitely be something to watch in this game.
I think you're right, because I think especially up front, I think I saw Notre Dame has topped, tied for 21st in the nation in sacks, and has got a nice pass rush all year, and that's going to be critical for Virginia Tech to try to slow that down a little bit. And they can do some RPO stuff with Ryan Willis like they did with Josh Jackson. I think that'll be interesting to see if they continue to try to do a little bit of that to try to keep that line off balance or keep that defensive line off balance a bit.
Yeah, it'll be fun to watch. The thing that keeps coming up, or Notre Dame fans keep talking about, is the atmosphere at Blacksburg. we still have nightmares of the Miami game last year, and people are worried that this will turn into another, they won't be ready for that type of atmosphere. But just tell us a little bit about the atmosphere there at Blacksburg, or what makes it so intimidating, I guess.
That's always surprising to me to hear that a team like, and I get it. I mean, obviously it's a whole lot different when they're cheering for you than or cheering against you than they are when they're cheering for you. But to play in a place like Notre Dame Stadium and have that that atmosphere that they have there, it's surprising to me that they would go on the road and not expect it to be loud and sort of crazy. But it is. It's a heck of an atmosphere. I went to college at the University of Georgia, so I was exposed to a lot of SEC ball growing up, and I remember when I started covering Virginia Tech back in 2000, which was Michael Vick's Redford sophomore year, his last season there in Blacksburg, and they were sort of starting to already develop that's sort of the early stages of that. One of the toughest places to play in the country type, reputation that they've further developed over the years. And I remember thinking, I've been to LSU and I've been to Auburn and I've been in the Swamp and obviously seen games in Tuscaloosa and there in Athens. And I thought, I got to see this to believe it. You know what I mean? I couldn't have believed it despite what everybody was saying. Yeah. I tell you what, man, it has, over the years, it has really, really taken on a life of its own. And, Inner Sandman has sort of become old, now sort of, it's an older, trend. And I know a lot of teams have picked that up as their entrance music. And, that's sort of where it originated there for that atmosphere. And they still do it up as loud as they did back in 2000 when they first started playing that song in the field. And it's a heck of an atmosphere. They get loud on third downs and, the fans start jumping. And when I say the fans start jumping, I mean, everybody's jumping. It's not just the student section. It's all the adults and older fans and alums. And I think part of it, the intimidation factor with the crowd is that, one side of the stadium, the visiting side of the stadium, actually is the east side. Those stands go straight up. I mean, it is a straight, almost a straight vertical look up into the air for coaches and players and the opposing side to look up and see fans up in that side. And it's got to be an intimidating scene, I would think, when they get loud in there, and they like to do that for a night game. I think they get good and lubed up all day long in those tailgates and those parking lots and come in there and let opposing teams hear it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think it makes it exciting. And Notre Dame fans, they definitely have a little more of a atmosphere than they used to. That was always kind of knocking Notre Dame, is that the fans weren't as loud or excited as a lot of other schools. But that has definitely changed in the past few years with the upgrades and everybody's just into the game. It just feels different than it used to.
Sure.
So I think Notre Dame's a little more prepared than what they had been in past years. And I know they've done a lot in practice to make sure that they don't have a repeat of the Miami game last year, because they were just completely caught off guard. So
right.
I think they're kind of looking forward to this to prove that the atmosphere doesn't affect them. But well, I guess we'll have to wait and see on Saturday.
Notre Dame got caught in a bad spot, I think, with that Miami atmosphere last year, because frankly, Miami doesn't have a reputation for having that great of an atmosphere. I mean, they've had many, many years where that place is just, even when they've had good starts and they've had good teams, that place is quiet. I mean, I think there's just so much to do in Miami. It's not necessarily a draw.
Yeah.
But last year, that was a scene I'd never seen that before out of them for that Notre Dame game. And there was a lot of hype, I think, around that game, and Mark Richt, I think, really sold that game to fans, and Notre Dame got caught in a bad spot. I mean, that was as loud as I've ever heard that place, and it really resonated just watching it on TV. It was as loud as I'd ever heard it down there.
Yeah, well, I mean, the games leading up to that, it just looked like the stands were half full. I mean,
right.
It didn't look like an intimidating atmosphere at all.
Not at all, yeah.
The buses got there, and they said right after they got there, people throwing beer cans and broke windows on the bus, and it right from the get-go, it became intimidating. So.
That sounds like West Virginia. That's what they do there. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, looking at Saturday's game, do you have a score prediction?
It's early. Yeah, man, it's early in the week. I guess we're doing this podcast on what it is, a Tuesday, I guess.
Tuesday.
So,
yeah.
It's a little early in the week for me to crank out a score, but I will say this. I am not far off on this one, I think, from what Vegas says. Vegas, I think, had Notre Dame is, what, a 4.5-point favorite, I think, opening up. And
yeah.
I could see that. And the only reason I say that is just because I think that they're they have not played a quarterback, I think, that can do as much both throwing and running the ball as Ian Book can. And I think that's obviously is the biggest storyline, I think, right now, the most public storyline anyway, with what Notre Dame is going through as far as the transition on the offensive side is concerned. And man, he really does seem to have put a shot in the arm for that offense in the last 2 weeks. And, just the increase in scoring and I am interested to see how, the issues in the offensive line with the injuries there in the interior, especially the big guy there at left guard is going to affect Notre Dame and Book in particular. But they're going to have to get some pressure on Book, and I think that's going to be difficult still, even with a little bit of a depleted offensive line. And I think they're obviously going to try to get the ball out of his hands quickly. And Virginia Tech has not done well over the years, in the last decade, against quarterbacks, mobile quarterbacks. And that's sort of been Bud Foster's Achilles as a defensive coordinator in the last decade, playing quarterbacks or preparing for quarterbacks that can run the ball a little bit. And he can do that. I know he can scoot around a little bit. So that's a concern, I think, for Virginia Tech. And I still think they've got some things to get ironed out with that secondary. So it wouldn't surprise me to see the game somewhere in the 28-20 range, maybe, for, with Notre Dame ended up on the positive side of that. And so we'll see, man. I may change that score between now and Saturday evening, but I do think Notre Dame wins the thing.
Yeah. Well, thanks for taking the time to call in today, and looking forward to the game on Saturday, and I think it'll be an exciting game to watch.
I am too, man. I think it's going to be a fun atmosphere, and I know it's been one that they've had circled on the calendar here in Blacksburg for a while. As a lot of places do when they get an infrequent visit from, first trip ever for Notre Dame to Blacksburg. And I know it's a party when Notre Dame comes to town, and there, a lot of teams are excited to have them, play on campus, and Virginia Tech is no different. I think it's going to be a fun atmosphere, and it should be a heck of a game.
Definitely. Yeah. Thanks again, Norm, for calling, and you have a good week.
All right, Randall, you too, man. Thanks.